Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Actual Flimsy Podcast. I've got a great episode for you today. I'm really excited to be back. Recently, I've had some internet problems, which has caused a sort of slowdown in the production of episodes, but I managed to get a good conversation recorded recently, and I'm glad to produce this episode for you. So we're back with kind of the core theme of the podcast, which is language learner stories. And what really excites me about that is that it gives you the opportunity to hear from other language learners, how they got into it, and, you know, any kind of experiences they have gotten along the way. Before we dive into today's episode, which is with Dimitrios Polychronopoulos, which I probably butchered that name, is a very long name for me. I don't speak Greek, unfortunately, yet. Today's episode is with him, and we're going to talk about his language learning experience and history and sort of tips and tricks on how to get from the beginning stages into intermediate and advanced, how to improve your writing in a foreign language, and other tips and tricks that he has come across during his experience of learning lots of languages and traveled to more than 100 countries, I believe, so he really knows his stuff. Just a quick shout out this week. I just wanted to say that if you're interested in what Benny Lewis is up to and the language hacking ideas, then you can now pre-order the new language hacking books. And there are some bonuses that await you if you choose to do so. So if you want to check that out, go to actualfluency.com/hacking offer. And the best offer you can get, which is a little bit ridiculous, but if you pre-order a lot of copies of these books, you get up to $5,000 worth of bonuses, which is pretty ridiculous. I don't think anyone listening to this is in that group who's capable of ordering that many books, but Benny is certainly dishing out a lot of bonuses if you do choose to. I mean, even 4 books, which is one of each language, German, French, Spanish, and Italian, if you pre-order just one of each, then you can get some pretty nice bonuses, I thought. So that's worth checking out. Go to actualfluency.com/hacking offer, and you can see all the details there. And if you live in the UK, the deadline is September 8th. And if you live in the US or Canada, then the deadline is September 29th. And of course, if you don't live in any of those countries, it all depends on which Amazon that you ship from. So if you live in Europe, it'll probably be the UK deadline. If you live in, let's say, South America, or yeah, I don't know where else you would use Amazon.com. I guess some countries, maybe in Asia, would use it. But anyway, the point is, depending on which Amazon you use, that's the deadline. So go and check that out. I really like those books, and I'm going to be really using them next year because I'm going to be doing my grand Romance languages marathon of trying to speak these 3 or 4. Well, I already speak German, but the 3 others certainly I'd love to do. And I've had a look at the books, and they really embody this language hacking idea of speaking quickly, learning the vocabulary that you need instead of all these unnecessary things, and just getting you speaking very quickly. So that's just a quick plug there. But now back to the regularly scheduled programming, which is the language learner story of Dimitrios. So let's hear it. The Actual Fluency Podcast is one that tells stories of language learners and people who are interested in that area, so industry experts or just people learning a lot of languages, or, you know, part of the community, as you probably know. And the first question I always ask people is kind of, what is your language learning story? And so that's the one I'd like you to share now, is like, how did you get into language learning, and how did you go from, you know, traveling to so many countries, and take us through that journey.
Sure. So I grew up in the States, and my dad's side of the family is Greek, and so I had already quite a bit of background there just growing up and being around the language. And also my favorite book was always The World Atlas. So I was always just digging into the Atlas and snooping around for places I'd dream of going one day. And I'd even start writing lists of languages that they would speak in the countries and say that I'd learn these languages. And people always thought I was crazy. I didn't really get a lot of support from anybody about that kind of thing, especially being, like 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old saying stuff like that doesn't really make sense to most people. So, but yeah, the background with being Greek and everything, there's a Greek school that they have in the basements of and in some of the facilities at a lot of Greek Orthodox churches in the States. So you get some background there as well, the reading and the writing, and you get some support there. So you already get your foot into language learning easily enough if you're a part of the Greek community. If you want it, there's the support for you. And then French was the language that I decided to study in high school. And by the third year of French, that really, really took off because there were some exchange students there from France. There were several exchange students from different countries, but having two people, actually, one was from Corsica, one from Vendée, and being around them almost every day for an entire academic year was a huge boost for really improving my French. And it was more realistic because the people were my age, whereas in the Greek community, you'd only get together a little bit, and I didn't really have any Greek neighbors, and there weren't people really my age around me. So French became a more important language really when I was a teenager. And then I got invited to France and spent some time there, an entire summer apart after high school graduation, and then back again. I decided to go back a few months later, ended up with a scholarship over there as well to study in Angers. I started studying Italian right as I was finishing high school. I kind of started dabbling in Italian as well. So by the time I was an adult, I kind of had my feet already in four languages, and I just kept going from there.
Awesome. And I kind of like that the French story, because the most common French story I hear when I talk to people, because French is obviously a very popular high school language all over the world, is they say, "Yeah, I finished French and I couldn't say a word." But you had that support from the students who came over, and how was that environment? Were they part of every class and you just kind of saw that foreign element that you'd been drawn to early in your life, and you just kind of snapped on? Or was it were all the French students in your class picking up French as good as you did? Or what
Yeah, it
happened?
actually became a problem because they had four levels of French, and I skipped from the third to the fourth level as I was moving along. The teacher says, "Let's move him along." And then I started getting encouraged to take the advanced placement exam because in the States they have this Princeton organization where you get college credit and you could get out of exams. You could take exams at the end of the scholastic year, and then if you pass it, you could get college credit and skip classes. And then people save money and time when they're doing university studies in the States if they've passed advanced placement exams. So I was the first one from my high school to ever take that exam and to pass that exam.
Wow.
And that was quite a strange thing for everybody. Like, wow. Because they gave recognition to other people studying foreign languages, and they gave small scholarships and stuff like that. But I was the only one who actually proved my ability by examination. And so nobody else in the French class was learning, and nobody else was really hanging out with the French kids as much as I was. So,
Wow, that
excuse
damn
me. So it was, yeah,
just the
it was
power of immersion right
definitely
there.
an anomaly, if you will.
Okay,
So.
well, that's interesting, because I wasn't sure if everyone from that class became a great French speaker, or it was because you kind of, like I said, latched on to that foreign element that you've been drawn to earlier.
It was more me. I've just found that it was a nicer ambiance to be with. It was a funner environment, and it was more exciting
Yeah,
than
I know
just
what you mean. I
yeah.
know what you mean exactly. It's like when you get someone coming to visit from somewhere else, it's kind of breaking up the usual pattern of the daily life. So I totally understand. And
That's cool.
the lack of support is something I also just wanted to run past, because I can sort of understand why people are not supportive of kids when kids say stuff, because at the end of the day, kids say they also want to be Superman, right? Or Batman or something. So when kids say they want to learn 20 languages, I can sort of understand people are not being super supportive of that. But what I would say is that it kind of saddens me that that stays all throughout life, I would say. If people are not in a multilingual environment or in a family where that's kind of been the history, then very often they dismiss the idea completely. If somebody in what's it say? Well, in the U.S. probably in the south of the U.S., if you went to your parents and said, and you just had completely were American parents with no, I mean that's hard not to have an heritage, but let's say it's a few generations throughout and a lot of it is gone, and you just say, well, I want to learn five languages. Even as an adult, you probably don't get much support there, which is kind of a shame because people don't believe it can be done, and so they kind of project their own ideas on you. But if we were more supportive, maybe people would be speaking more languages. I don't know. What do you think?
I would say that the support is really important, and that's why I'm really encouraged by some of the people like Adwan Challenge, for example. I think that's a really good way to offer support. If that kind of thing can go into the classroom, then definitely that would be something that could change the attitudes. And you have on your podcast as well, you had in one of your seasons, you had someone from the Midwest who was working with immigrants and such.
Richard.
Richard, he had some amazing things to say about making language relevant as well. And he's got some blog posts about that. So I think this just needs to become more mainstream, that people need to educators, shall we say, need to reach out and get in touch with these methods, and these methods need to reach out to the people as well, so that everything becomes relevant and everybody gets encouraged, because then it wouldn't be so unusual for people to learn languages, and people who do learn the languages, it would just kind of snowball. So I think that would, instead of like in my case, I was a little bit of a nuisance to the other French students, excuse me, because they could see that I was the only one who was actually able to speak the language, and it was a bit intimidating for those other people.
Of course, it's pride, isn't
So,
it?
yeah. So, I was actually told to kind of calm down, in a way, yeah.
That's just, I mean, that just makes me sad because I experienced a similar thing growing up, and it's just the school system has this stupid idea that if people are really good at something, they should kind of, just sit in the corner and do extra papers, or just, you don't want the other students to think they're worse. And it creates this kind of, oh, we're all the same, And I just don't think so. I think, of course, we should help the people who are struggling in a subject, but likewise, I think we should encourage the people who are doing really well and send them on these, placement or these, what do you call them, like rapid paths or whatever, because it's a waste of a, like, probably you wasted probably a lot of classes sitting there thinking, oh, they're talking about this simple concept again, and it's just a waste of your time, really. But I mean, if we had to dismantle the school system and point out all the flaws, then we could probably talk for weeks. But I don't know. Do you think language learning is getting more mainstream? Because obviously, there's more and more events, and there's more chatter about it. There's more people at the events. But at the same time, I don't know if I feel a huge change of mentality from the people who aren't already in the community, the people who already know about it. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, if you look at the Adwan Challenge, then you can see that there are some new people encountering it for the first time. And also, when you go, like at the Polyglot Berlin gathering, one of the things was last May, the person who filled up the room the most was Benny Lewis. And so I'd already had all this experience with languages before I first heard about Benny Lewis. And then he started peddling the books and such. And I was following along, kind of just and not really participating in anything, just kind of as a silent observer. So when I saw what kind of impact Benny can have on somebody's motivation, and bringing somebody who maybe had failed to learn a language several times, and then finally make a breakthrough, I think that people like that can be very good to encourage foreign language learning in general. I don't know that it's come as far as, it's definitely not come as far as I'd like it to, but at least it's made some first steps, because these are like Brian Kwong and Benny Lewis are two individuals that I can explicitly point to who have actually, if it hadn't been for them, perhaps that person still would be without the language learning that they have today. That those followers, those people who have actually made those improvements, may have otherwise not been able to make a breakthrough.
Yeah, and you can point that, you can even point that further back to someone like Richard and Alex, who created the first conference in Budapest, where Brian got the idea for the Add One Challenge. But also, that's when it became real in a way, because before, people were just sitting in their, in the little bedroom or whatever, dimly lit, and studying their old dusty teach yourself, but when I think it was about 100 people or something like that met in Budapest, unfortunately I couldn't make it because I didn't know the word polyglot at the time, and I didn't even know this was a thing. That's a funny aside, but that's kind of where it started, right?
It's funny. I was not a part of it at all, and then I found out. I saw the BBC had posted a video of Alex Rawlings, and I thought it was the coolest thing.
The
And
one in
then
the
I started
park.
looking into it. It was the one where he speaks in Catalan and he speaks in Afrikaans and Dutch and Greek and
Yeah, it's a great video,
Russian and
isn't
so. And it was subtitled, of course. I just thought it was the coolest thing. And that's when I finally started looking into it, and I managed to make it to last year's polyglot gathering. So that's when I started really being a part of it and being more interested. So now I've been trying to think of what kind of contribution I can make as well, and trying to come up with something new, not just to repeat the same old stuff that's already out there. So
That's cool. And what do you take as someone who did a lot of the language learning before you found out there were other people doing it, compared to someone like me who learned about it and then started doing it?
it's kind of funny. In some ways, I feel I missed some ground, but that's okay. There's always time to catch up. It gives me time. It had given me time to look back and try to reflect a bit on what was all out there. So I was basically doing an MBA here in Oslo, where I live at the time that I learned about it all. And then I was still doing the MBA when I attended the polyglot gathering in Berlin, and then finally graduated, and then started looking at things. And we even had an entrepreneurial course, which we did. It was a modular MBA program, so total of 6 modules and a consultancy project. So we did a module in Berkeley on entrepreneurship and innovation, and I've attended a variety of workshops like design thinking and so on. So I'm trying to put this together as something for more advanced people. So I started blogging in my 8 best languages, shall we say, and it's a new thing. I did present it a bit in Berlin at the gathering as one of the startup activities. They had the startup lightning talks,
Yeah.
but I spent a lot of my time talking to the audience and finding out how they currently have their writing corrected and so forth, and wrote some posts about it. My goal is to continue to post about once a week as a minimum, but more importantly is to try to bring others in, so that I want to encourage them to post as well, and not necessarily in their best language, but in another language, and then encourage others to come in and correct and so on. I'm not sure if I'm onto something or if it's not the right direction. They also say that entrepreneurs have to pivot a lot, and I haven't even gotten past the test users yet. So I'm focusing on getting a group of, let's say, up to 30 people together. Each one would write a post and each one would correct a post and provide feedback on how the site looks and its user friendliness and so forth, so I can make some improvements and move along from there. It's kind of stuck at the moment, but I guess that's the typical thing of something new. It takes a while to gain some traction.
Of course, and you can never know, you can never predict what people are gonna, if they're gonna use it or not, until you've actually given it that time and shown everyone and say, hey, this is my idea, would you like to try it out? And after a significant amount of time, you know whether or not it's something that people would be up to. There are a few things there I wanted to touch upon as well. First of all, the idea of improving beyond the intermediate stages, or I think you said advanced, but going into the advanced stages anyway. Do you think that that is a very underrepresented underrepresented area of language learning, and if so, do you have any ideas on how people can do that easier?
Yeah, let's first talk about your question on being underrepresented. It's definitely underrepresented, even by nature. When people are studying a language, obviously, if they get to A2, and then move on to another language for a variety of reasons, maybe they're living in a country for a short period of time, or taking a language class, or something. It could be something like somebody's with someone and then they break up, so they're learning the language and then they end up breaking up, and then they stop having interest in it. It could be that they have a short assignment working with certain people or traveling to a certain country. So it's only normal that the beginning level has a lot of material out there, and it's easier to also reach the beginning level. And then you get to the theory of diminishing returns. So you just the more you're just spending all this extra time, and you just don't see the efforts paying off once you're getting into the upper intermediate level. It just goes on and on. It's like a never-ending story, especially with a really complicated language like Chinese, for example, which is the most difficult language I've ever personally experienced, because with all my background in European, Chinese language would be so different and so difficult for me. But I have a feeling that I'll never break out of the upper intermediate level, no matter what, unless I go back to the Far East and live there again and really put all that effort into it. But I'm just basically maintaining it and so on.
Well,
And
I guess the question is,
yeah.
do you need to be like super high level in Chinese? I mean, if you get all the benefits of being the level you are now without, well, okay, possibly you couldn't work as a Chinese interpreter, but unless you want to do that, then maybe actually the effort of going to that level is just so high that, like you said, the diminishing returns just get so high that maybe it's not worth the effort at all, depending on what your goals are, of course. I mean, everyone's different, and there are people who want to be interpreters or translators who need that high technical knowledge. But if somebody's listening out there and says, I just want to learn to speak it, I guess they don't need to worry too much about getting to a high C1 level anyway.
Yeah, most people, even myself, unless, like I say, suddenly I find myself living back there again,
Sure.
then I'm just, at least I'm maintaining it. I'm doing stuff, so I use it a little bit here and there, every month, so it doesn't just disappear. So it maintains its level, shall we say. Yeah, for other languages, it's just easier. It's just a lot easier to I think if you were Chinese, if you were Cantonese and you're working on Mandarin, it must be so much easier as well. Just like for me to work on another European language and to maintain it at a high level or to reach that higher level, it's just not that difficult, shall we say.
Right.
Chinese is just particularly hard.
Well, we can talk about the writing in just a second, but I just wanted to talk about, let's say I was, well, I haven't quite learned French yet. I had it a bit in school, and it's on my, let's call it 5-year plan, where I want to learn it within the next 5 years. And let's say I made it to an intermediate level, and I was kind of feeling a little bit stuck. What would be some of your tips to take me from, let's say, the between B1, B2 up to that really good C1 level?
Yeah, for French in particular, I would definitely say get yourself to France, yeah, definitely there's nothing like that, and to be completely immersed in it. It was so wonderful living in France and having that, because I was already at quite a good level before I ever set foot in the country, but then being surrounded by it every single day was just amazing. And I just found myself completely thinking in it and being very spontaneous in it, and it was just great. People didn't really know where I was from when they heard me speaking or anything. It was more like I could just be a local and blend in, and it was a wonderful experience. But without living there, I think that's very difficult to, at least personally, I don't see how someone would do it. But that's my own experience, is getting really to a high level requires living in the country.
That's all right. That's all right. And I was just, what is it? I'm thinking, is it because is it because it's just such a workload, and we need superhuman motivation to actually put in that kind of workload, unless we are in the country where we kind of where the brain says, well, you are here anyway, so you kind of need to do it. Where if we're sitting in Wisconsin, we're like, well, why should I learn French? You know, why should I study to become great at French if I use it, you know, every 6 months at a conference or something?
Yeah, that's a good point, because there's a huge difference between living in one spot and then the language. You know, you could try to create your own mini environment, shall we say, but it's always going to be kind of fake and limited. But when you're really in the environment itself, just every little thing that happens, and it all builds up, and you become more fluent, you become, your whole attitude changes, and you start taking on and understanding a lot more cultural issues as well, whereas the cultural issues aren't as deeply involved when you're learning a language. As you get more and more into the intermediate level, you get a lot of different books that will talk about culture as well, and you can start getting into the cultural issues with it, but there's such a strong connection. Of course, French being a particular language, being spoken not only in France, but also in some parts of Switzerland, the southern part of Belgium, and also being the language of Quebec and so on, also parts of West Africa, it's also, depending on where people are going to be using the French, what kind of contact or what kind of professional atmosphere they have. Maybe they're only going to be using it for Canada, and then they have to focus on that version of French.
Yeah, which is also a totally interesting side note there. I was just there in Montreal, and it's a very interesting form of French. You know, for someone who doesn't speak it, of course, I can't catch all the small differences, but it sounds very different, and I could obviously understand most of the reading because it's so close to English and I've studied it before. But it was funny to hear that. I talked to my Airbnb host, and he said for many years, people in Quebec province would actually be taught using French language learning books. So the materials in schools would be from France, and then they would go out of the classroom and they would speak Quebec French. So, I mean, that's happened very recently, he said.
It's ridiculous, really. Yeah. I mean, I did some studies for Spanish at an intermediate and advanced language level in Montevideo, and unfortunately had a lot of textbooks from different places, but none from Rio de la Plata. And you might know that the dialect spoken in Buenos Aires and and also in Montevideo is revolving around the use of vos rather than tu. So el voseo. So you have a complete different conjugation here.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous that you'd be exposed to textbooks saying tu puedes when the real people out on the street are going to say vos podés. And it's just not right, in my opinion. Everybody needs to be exposed to the dialect where they're going to be, and the materials need to be available. In fact, that's a funny example, because my first experience with learning Chinese, I was living in Kaohsiung, Taiwan, and I was using materials from Beijing. And so I was going out saying something like, 我会说 Beijing Hua, and then the people would be saying on the street like, 我会说国语. So it was a silly, silly example, but I just basically had to use the materials. It was the only thing I had, and get over it.
Yeah.
And people would make it so that, okay, they would basically be telling me. At first, of course, I had no idea, but I caught on quite quickly that people were saying that my accent was emulating the Beijing dialect rather than the way Mandarin spoken in Taiwan. So
right. And would that have a negative association, like you're trying to sound like you're from the big city or something?
Just ridiculous more than anything. And okay. And so people thought it was funny, and it didn't take me long to get over it. And then it was fun when I finally went to Beijing about 2 years later. I already was very familiar with the Beijing accent and so forth, and I could run around the streets a little bit speaking in that way, kind of adding that sound onto the end of a lot of things. And
you fit right in.
Yeah, it was a fun experience, and there's nothing wrong with getting some extra in, but it's good to be completely aware of what you're doing if your materials are limited and you just want to get on with it and learn. Yeah. Then At least you're learning rather than sitting around not knowing anything.
For sure. Do you use any tutors or teachers when you're in learning mode, or do you prefer to just use the support of somebody like AdOne Challenge and do it on your own?
The AdOne challenge I've done for two languages. So I was at a maybe an A2 version of Dutch and an A2 version of Norwegian when I first got into AdOne challenge. I didn't do them both at the same time. First I did Norwegian and then I did Dutch. And I definitely find that it's a great community and it definitely pushed the ability into a higher level, and I definitely had people notice it. Norwegians definitely noticed that I had made a huge jump in my Norwegian, and when I was visiting in the Netherlands, family was telling me as well, "Wow, what an improvement you've made from a few months ago with Dutch." So, before those times, obviously we didn't have the AdOne challenge so long ago. So, I would just basically, like with the Dutch language, I had in Amsterdam, I'd grabbed some books, like Contact, which has a few CDs. And another one, Nederlands voor Zelfstudie. And so I was basically just listening to that a lot of passive learning and just a lot of listening, listening, listening. For Norwegian, I did a class, an intensive class, and then I just went on my own with some of the material that was available online, like NTNU has a very good course for getting people up to B1. And the textbook Nynorge also had some materials for you to use online, and then I just continued going to the library, getting some CDs, getting some books. And I would have a tendency, and I still do today, to put something in, like in the old days it was a cassette tape in a Walkman, and now it's downloading this stuff onto the device and then just listening to it on the go. And just listening to it, you might be working out, walking, whatever, doing errands, and you just listen and you just take things in. At the very beginning stage, you might not know most of anything at all, but you just familiarize yourself with the sound of the language, and then eventually you start to pick up more and more words, and then you know exactly where one word is ending, the next word is beginning, and you just keep moving in that way, and eventually you build up a great ability to listen, and eventually that passes on to speaking, and Link is one of my favorites. It doesn't have the support in all the languages, but like Norwegian is lacking. They have quite a bit of Swedish, but not so much Norwegian. So I kind of use that when I'm in the mood. I use that for many, many languages at different levels, and I find that great. And he's made some Steve Kaufman's made some great improvements, so that now with the Chinese, you're getting the simplified and the complex character, and you're getting the pinyin.
Wow, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And the listening thing is something that I recently got into because there was always this great divide on in the polyglot community that seemed to be when I was trying to find out whether I should take this. Some call it the silent period. Some call it the listening period. The SML has it too. The passive period. And there was always people saying like, "Well, that's stupid. Why would you want to waste, some time where you don't understand any of it?" And then there were some people saying, like you say, that it actually is helping shape your brain in that language. So you understand the pronunciation, you understand the sound of the language, the melody of the language. And so what I did recently to test this out, I'm all about experimentation. I've got the Harry Potter Hungarian one. The first one is not a long book. And I know other people like to use the Harry Potter series for improving their reading in foreign languages. But what I did was I just took the audiobook and I had the physical book as well. And so I just listened really actively. So instead of just kind of, walking around and because if I do that, my mind drifts like really easy. And I don't know if other people have this problem, but it's really hard for me to listen to something I don't understand because then my mind would just start wandering and eventually it'd just be like white noise, And likewise, if I had only the book or the text and I tried to read it without understanding anything, I would get really bored after like 5 minutes. But by actively listening and just following along in the book with my finger, just every single word, I really think it's improving my Hungarian. And I don't understand much of it yet, but That's not really the point of doing this exercise, I think. It's not about building your vocabulary right away. It's a kind of a, I feel like it's an upfront investment in your long-term language ability. And I'd rather spend a little bit more time building that foundation instead of just going out and learning, 20 touristy phrases that I can throw around like a beach ball, if that makes any sense.
No, that's really cool. And like in Link, there's no Hungarian, so you found a way to kind of emulate
Exactly.
that. At least you're doing the reading and the active listening, because there is definitely a difference. I sometimes when I of course, then you have to have complete focus. You can't just be involved in errands or walking down the street or whatnot.
Nope.
But I find that that's a great thing to do. I just don't do it as often as I'd like. Link is the laziest way to do it because it's all set up for you. You have so much material, and then you just pull up something, and you can just, I mean, there's some of the stuff, like you can get a whole Jules Verne. Sometimes I'm just in the mood to spend a half hour on Link. I'll do it in French for 15 minutes, and then the very same chapter in Dutch. It's
Right.
always Jules Verne, like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or something. And in the French, maybe there's one or two words in the whole chapter that is brand new to me. And then in Dutch, of course, it's like 30% of the vocabulary is unfamiliar. But it's just fun. And
That's
of course,
important.
any
You got to keep it fun.
you have to like it. And I definitely try to find anything that I like rather than to make it torture. It always has to be something fun.
Yeah, and I got the Harry Potter book for two reasons. First of all, because the Harry Potter series, which I read quite furiously when they came out, was one of the one of the best fiction, some of the best fiction I've ever read. I was an English major in college, and that those kind of classics never really interested me much. So I was more like, yeah, Harry Potter, I could read all night. When I got the new one, I would read it in like 12 hours in one sitting.
Wow.
But give me something like Jules Verne. For me, that will take me months and probably never get it done. I'll probably start skimming and get on Cliff Notes and all this stuff. But I know the good thing about Harry Potter is I've read it in English, so I know the story, and I've also seen the movies, of course, but I know the story. So the brain actually gets some help, some a little bit of cheating, which means that it can sometimes guess the meaning of words that you've never heard, never seen, just through kind of, I guess, analytical deduction of what the other words around it means. And of course, yes, I'm learning how to say wizard and witch, which isn't that useful in daily life, but if you're living your life, you kind of have to speak about your interests, right? So you can speak about the Harry Potter series, and I'm sure I can find Hungarian people who also enjoy it. And it's a steady increase in difficulty because the first book is, it's I think it's like 250 pages or something, and one of the other books is like 700 pages. So you get that, and they also get older, so the language grows up a little bit too. So for me, it's just a perfect kind of listening exercise to improve my listening, which is something that I didn't do for Russian, which meant that I didn't have a very good Russian pronunciation. And you'd think, how are they related? But what I realized was, if you can't hear how things are supposed to be said, how are you ever going to reproduce them? And my tutor was saying something. It was probably the SH letter, sure, which is. S sounds for Danish people, it's like impossible. Don't try to make us say something like, the place where animals are being displayed. That word is impossible. So basically, she was saying the difference, and I was like, there's no difference in my ear. But that's obviously because I didn't have enough exposure to the language to actually realize there was a difference. And only then could I say the different pronunciation.
Yeah, it's amazing. We'll never run out of languages where there are sounds that the normal person's just not familiar with. I know some super duper linguists out there will know every single sound that exists in every language of the world, probably. But most of us, sometimes you just find some language that's way out there that, like you said, I guess the Z in zoo, you say in
Yes, I would say if I didn't try to say it,
difficult in
I'd just say Sue.
Danish.
Well, in Danish we call it.
That's almost like the German. It's almost like the Zug,
Yeah,
like the train in German.
right. Yeah, it's probably similar. But
Yeah, instead
yeah,
of
it's terrible. My
Zu, it's Zug.
people make fun of me for that. But Whatever. That's, the limitations of my abilities anyway.
In Europe, I think the hardest sounds for me are the Slavic, especially the Russian sh and the sh.
Yeah.
Something I don't think I've really gotten that good with this. I can
That
do
was
the ts and
exactly
the
the
ch
one
and the sh and the sh.
the one I had trouble with. And I end up sounding like Chinese, It's like, go to the sure. And it's like, no, that's too far, But anyway, I wanted to just quickly before we wrap up here, I wanted to just talk about writing as well, because that's something that you obviously are very interested in, and it's something that is sometimes glossed over a little bit. And when people are saying they're learning a language and they say, oh, I just want to learn how to speak, and I think for many people that's a fine goal. But what do you recommend if let's say I've studied Russian and I can speak it somewhat, but when I start to write, I feel like I'm hitting my head against the wall. Like, what are the next steps I need to take to go from that initial beginner speaking level to develop some kind of writing ability? Do I just have to write, or are there some methods or techniques I can use to make that a little simpler?
Yeah, back in the pre-digital days when I was in the Soviet Union, I stayed there for 3 months and I was very intensively studying Russian. I was using Ruskiy yazyk dla vsekh, if you've been exposed to that book.
No.
It was a very Soviet book. And of course, one of the words you learn in it is tovarish,
Of
tovarish,
course,
and so on,
comrade.
the comrade. But I was writing all kinds of exercises and I always was fascinated by Russian cursive.
Oh
So
man.
exercises, and my host family would correct my writing and so forth. I still have the book, the workbook, and it has all this red everywhere. So easy to make so many mistakes. I haven't really gotten beyond that level of Russian. My Russian's still kind of alive, but it's never really been that good, and it probably never will get that good. But if you were to want to improve a lot, then I would probably recommend Lang 8 for the upper beginner and into the intermediate stages, because you just have your writing corrected. I use it sometimes for Norwegian, and they've allowed now to have two languages, so I started using it for Dutch as well. And then I don't know if my website will take off to the point that it becomes a source as well for people who want to go beyond Lang 8. Because that's the whole idea, is for once you've kind of outgrown Lang 8 and you still want to write like a whole article, let's say 500 words or more, you still have a long way to go when you're able to write an article for the first time. It's so easy to have awkward constructions and strange things, even even punctuation changes, excuse me, with each language.
Oh
So
yeah.
what you might consider a correct use of a punctuation, you might be a master at one language with the punctuation uses. Suddenly, in another language, you just wouldn't be using commas and the clauses and so forth the same way. So
Yeah.
that's another example of a never-ending story
But
with
what was your
language learning.
website again? Just so people know where to go and check it out.
It's yozzi.com. So it's yozzi.com, yozzi.com.
Awesome. And then people can go over and make their own judgment about whether they think the concept is good or bad, and they can let you know. And I've seen this kind of multilingual blogging before, just individuals doing it. Of course, it's a lot of work if you want to do all your blogging in 8 different languages, but if people could somehow get together and contribute interesting articles and then work on the review aspect as well, maybe that's a good teaching exercise too, to try and find the errors. I don't know. I guess time will tell.
That's what I was thinking as well. Time will tell as well, and then maybe just some different. It might end up pivoting into something else. You never know. So.
Yeah, well, it's always good to stay dynamic and fluid in every business, I guess, or language learning is no different. So we're gonna meet in Greece, I guess, in
Yeah, it's 2 months
Thessaloniki,
away.
2 months away. I'm super excited about Thessaloniki. I mean, I was at the conference last year in New York, and that was amazing. And I can't wait to see what they do this time in Thessaloniki. Obviously, a very different location than in the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed out on that one last year. But anyway, it's good that the ones I do get to participate in, I'm really grateful for. So.
Yeah, and you can lead the way in Greek. So if I look confused of having absolutely zero Greek knowledge, then you can always help me around and order the food and everything.
And the accent Thessaloniki is different. The L is produced at the back of the mouth rather than at the top of the mouth like it is in southern Greece.
Oh, really?
So it's like Thessaloniki instead of Thessaloniki. And it's a bit more of an impact maybe from Slavic, because you think of the L from the Slavic languages as well.
Yeah.
So
That's interesting.
you might catch that when you're there.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I always love to meet everyone, and there's kind of a core group who always goes to all these events, and it's funny to catch up with friends and get all that motivation. I just feel like I feel so pumped when I come home from one of these events,
That's cool.
Just got to get home to
Yeah.
the books and keep studying.
It's going to be exciting. Really looking forward to it. It's going to be overwhelming though, because there are going to be so many people, and it's just impossible to meet everyone.
Oh
So.
yeah, unfortunately, but that's why we have to keep going every year, so hopefully the percentage of people gets lower and lower.
Yeah.
Or the percentage of people you don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever, people will understand. But thank you so much for coming on to the show, and I'm glad that we could make this happen in spite of internet problems and other disturbances. So thank you for sharing your story and your passion for the language learning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure being your guest.
All right, thanks.
Take it easy.
You
Bye-bye.
too. Thank you so much for listening to the Actual Fluency podcast. If you want to come onto the podcast and share your language learning story, don't hesitate to apply on actualfluency.com/guest. See you in the next one.